This is Eco Radio KC, a locally produced exploration of positive solutions to the ecological challenges we face as we work to create a healthier future for our community and the planet.
Good evening, and thank you for tuning in to Eco Radio. On tonight's program, we welcome Mrs. Elnora Jefferson of the Historic Northeast Midtown Association. She will be joining us to speak about the ongoing issue at John Garland Park in Kansas City, Kansas. And she brings with her two fellow community members and pastors from Wyandotte County. But first, my name is Natural E with your headline news. Reuters.com reports Chile's tiny tilt-tale faces big trash problems. One after another, trains haul more than 12 tons of rubbish daily to the small Chilean community of Tiltil, 35 miles northwest of Santiago, the equivalent of at least two-thirds of the capital's municipal waste. This town of 17,000 is the last stop for much of the trash produced by a city of 7 million. The Ministers' Committee, a gathering of high-ranking Chilean political officials who decide the fate of controversial projects, last year approved the construction of a sprawling new industrial waste processing facility here. Already, Tiltil, a desert-dry community of yellow hills fringed with cactus fruit farms, has more than 30 industrial projects. Among them, several mining waste sites, a pig farm, a cement plant, and Lomas Los Colorados, one of Santiago's largest waste dumps. With this newly approved facility operated by Ciclo, a local waste management company, Tiltil will become the last stop for more than half the industrial waste produced from northern Chilean mining region of Atacama to Biobío province in the south, according to a report from Chile's Congress. The community has protested, blocking the train tracks that funnel trash north and Route 5, known locally as the Pan American Highway, and a major trucking thoroughfare that transits the city. The National Committee that approved the project says safeguards have put in place to minimize contamination or impact on town's people. Quote, there is no health risk for the population, end quote, Ciclo says on its website. The company hopes to see the project begin operation in 2019, according to its promotional materials. The far north of Australia was lashed by a Category 3 tropical cyclone over the weekend, bringing strong winds and heavy rain that raised fears of potential flooding. Tropical Cyclone Nora reached the northern state of Queensland late on Saturday, where it impacted the western coast of Cape York at the northern tip of the state. There were no reports of injuries so far, although utilities company Ergon Energy said more than 230 homes had temporarily lost power. The Bureau of Meteorology had predicted the cyclone could reach Category 4 status, but it weakened as it crossed from the Northern Territory east into Queensland. The Bureau reported winds of up to 100 kilometers per hour with up to 110 millimeters of rainfall. Whales die after mass stranding in Australia. All but six of more than 150 short-finned pilot whales that stranded themselves on a beach in Western Australia have died, despite efforts from authorities and local beachgoers to save them, officials said on Saturday. The marine mammals stranded themselves in Hamelin Bay, 315 kilometers south of the state's capital, Perth, between March 22nd and 23rd. So far, the remaining six whales appear to have survived, although incident controller Jeremy Chick said they could attempt to beach themselves at another location. Pilot whales, which are part of the dolphin family, weigh between 1 and 4 tons each, providing a logistical challenge to local authorities who are now working on disposing of the carcasses. While whales regularly get stranded on the coastal strip, migrating between Antarctica feeding grounds in the south and warmer northern waters where they raise their young, the large number this time is unusual. And finally, magnitude 6.3 quake strikes off Papua New Guinea, no tsunami threat. A 6.3 magnitude earthquake struck off the northeast coast of an island at the Pacific Ocean nation of Papua New Guinea on Saturday, officials said, but the tremor posed no tsunami threat to the region. There were no immediate reports of damage or casualties from the quake, which was centered in a much more remote region than a magnitude 7.5 tremor that rocked the country's mountainous mainland highlands on February 26, killing 100 people. Quakes are common for Papua New Guinea, which sits on the Pacific's Ring of Fire, a hot spot for seismic activity due to friction between tectonic plates.
And thank you very much for the news, Natural E. This is Mike Murphy here, and we have Representative Daron McGee on the phone. He's the representative of Missouri, state representative from the 36th District, and he is in Jefferson City at the Capitol right now. Is that right, Representative McGee?
Yes, sir, it is. Thanks for having me, Mike.
Well, thank you. I appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule. You just got back to Jefferson City today?
Yes, we were on a 10-day spring break. We started back today. We're actually in session currently. I stepped out to do the show, and we're already underway for the second half of the legislative session. We'll be adjourning in the third week of May.
Well, Representative McGee, the reason I asked you to come on is I've had a chance to hear you speak a couple times, and you're you seem to be very environmentally aware, and so I thought since you're from the Kansas City area, it's been high time we had you on the program. So just in a general sense, like in the state of Missouri, what do you think are some of the hot environmental issues?
Well, I think that what we're looking at right now, I'm on the budget committee, and so we just see a constant assault on our state parks, both in funding of keeping them going and maintaining our state parks, as well as I think it's important to note that there are folks who are just as not environmentally conscious on the budget committee. And so I don't know if many of your listeners may have saw an article in the Kansas City Star last week where there was a big dispute about, in one of the state parks, there's something called the bourbon virus. And we've had two state park employees who have gotten this disease and died. And the testing can only be done by the CDC, and so they have to do the labs and mail everything to Atlanta to the CDC. And so in response to that, the Republicans have decided that they wanted to sort of show the health department for the state and sort of be punitive because of their response to the bourbon virus has not been quick enough, and that they had decided to move all of the health labs to the Department of Public Safety, which is the Highway Patrol and the state troopers. These folks are not qualified to oversee health labs when you talk about disease at any level. And so I and many others tried to fight that, and the Highway Patrol was sitting in the meeting, and we wanted to question them and allow them to see if that was something they could even do. And the chairman of the committee would not let them speak. So the question really in my mind is, do you really want cops over your health labs? And I think for many people it would be no. And so there is a lot going on here in Jefferson City. You know, there is still an assault that they want to sell park lands and take revenue for that to supplement the budget. There is still former Governor Jay Nixon did a lot to expand park lands and protect natural resources for the state. And making more state parks and protecting our wildlife here in the state of Missouri. And there are a number of folks on the other side now who wish to roll that back, sell those park lands to private industry, because I know there's one particular park land that they want to use for mining, and they want to sell those lands, and they want to use that to supplement our budget shortfall that the Republicans have created to give corporate tax cuts to folks who don't need them. And so, you know, I have consistently been against that and protecting our natural resources and our wildlife here in the state of Missouri.
That's great. Any other things you can think of? What, anything going on with CAFOs, with factory farms or anything like that? Or
no, there's not anything going on the agenda this session with that. I think the biggest fight has also been, as we talk about water pollution, making sure we all have clean and safe drinking water. You know, there has still been a push to roll back regulations on protecting our water here in the state. And you would think that that would be something that many folks would not be supportive in light of what happened in Flint, Michigan, because, you know, as you can see, you know, water is not only important for drinking, but it's important for bathing and other things. And so there are a lot of folks who want to roll back the regulations in which we use to have clean, safe drinking water here in the state of Missouri. And so we've been pushing back against that as well.
And speaking of clean water, this Blue River has been the source of a lot of discussion for the past year or two with regards to pollution going into that river, and the city being mandated to do something about it. Any insight on what's going on with the Blue River?
I'm not aware of anything when it relates to pollution, but I can talk to you directly about the fact that I know from a safety perspective in my district, the Blue River has flooded several times. I have that area of South Kansas City along the 103rd Street corridor, where Coaches flooded. There was a shopping center that flooded twice last spring. Because of the rising Blue River, because of the torrential rains that we were getting. And as you can see from the weather we had today, you know, that is likely to happen again this year with the spring weather we've been getting. And so one of the things we want to make sure is that we are expanding the basin of the Blue River to protect people who live around the river, because there's a lot of constituents that I have that I serve that live around that river. There's a lot of homes there, businesses. And so we want to keep people safe because there were several people trapped inside of Coaches when that river overcame 103rd Street and over to Warnell, because that, in fact, the firefighter, most of that area was impassable for anybody that was driving their car, and the firefighters had to do search and rescue for several people in those buildings that were trapped.
Wow. Yeah, I do remember that. That was... last year we had quite, you know, three really severe flood days or periods.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, that's exactly right. I mean, I think we're all on the same page, and it's really important with folks like you and your listeners to stay active and to hear what's going on both at the city level and at state level, because these things will affect your daily life at some point. And I think it's really important the work that the Sierra Club does. I mean, they're very, very on top of the legislative issues here at the state. They provide talking points, and they provide research analysis for any environmental bills that comes through the legislature here. The Sierra Club has just done top-notch research for policymakers and for constituents interested in environmental issues. And so I would encourage any of your listeners, if you care about the environment in the state and locally, to really reach out to the Sierra Club, because they provide real in-depth research on these bills and ordinances that affect the environment both locally at the city level and at the state here in Jefferson City. And they're just a great resource for anybody who's interested in environmental protection and protecting wildlife here in the state.
Do you have any comment on what's going on with the Bannister Federal Complex? Is that your district?
No, that is not my district. At this point, I have not been there. I have not. I've actually been invited. I want to take a tour as soon as session ends in May. I'm going to go on a tour there to go to the site myself. I have not been there. I've gone to a couple of community meetings and heard from the folks. I know that they have now, it's no longer a federal facility anymore. It's now called the Bannister or something other, but it's no longer a federal complex. But they have turned it over to private developers from the feds. And so I've been in meetings with those folks, and they are now tearing buildings down, and they've got water retention ponds there. And so I will be doing a tour as soon as the session ends here in Jefferson City, touring that facility and meeting with those folks and trying to get some answers on some of the things that many of the constituents are concerned about over there.
A lot of people are concerned about the tear down of the buildings that, you know, that will kick up a lot of dust and things from a lot of heavy metals and things out there over the years.
Yeah, and I agree, and I know that has been a concern expressed to me. I know the developers have got some highly trained folks who are trained in that sort of dismantling of those buildings with the use of the highly radioactive materials that may have been in those buildings and on that site. So I know that they've got some highly qualified folks over there. I have not been, like I said before, I've not been there, but I'm looking forward to taking a tour of the other facility over there since it's been transferred back from federal authority to private development. So,
also, I understand that the entire what was formerly the Bannister Federal Complex. The entire thing is not changing hands. Some of it is still being retained by the federal government, including a landfill that was used for weapons and explosives dating back to the 40s, so that the government will still hold on to that landfill. And not, you know, I don't think there's any plans to do anything about that. And
I'm not aware of that. The only thing I know that the government did retain, because there is one federal office still there, and that is the Marine Center
DFAS.
That is there.
Yeah.
And that's the only federal facility that I know that is still there. I'm not aware of any landfill.
Yeah, and if you get a chance to look at a map, you can see it, that landfill is very close to the Blue River. So,
okay.
Yeah, just
okay.
Something to be aware of. Anything else we have? I know you're very busy. I really appreciate you being generous with your time.
I just want to reiterate to your listeners, and publicly thanking you for the work that you're doing, informing the public on these very important environmental issues that we're dealing with here at the state and at the city. And if I can be a resource to any of your listeners, feel free to call my office here in Jefferson City. Or you can shoot me an email as well. It's Daron, D-A-R-O-N, dot McGee, M-C-G-E-E, at house.mo.gov. Feel free to email me with any questions or concerns you may have with any environmental legislation we may be taking up. And, again, reaching out to your local Sierra Club. I speak at their meetings when I'm invited to speak. But, you know, anytime that you all have concerns that – it's really important to hear from you all, because a lot of times, you know, I think the policymakers only hear from the special interests in the industry and not necessarily from the environmental side. So I think it's important that, you know, people always say the writing your local elected official or emailing your local elected official or calling doesn't work. I'm the complete opposite. I think that is the first step, and I think hearing from local constituents is the right step, so we know where the public really stands on this, because I think most people are where we are on these issues. It's just getting the word out.
Yeah, that's right. That's what we're trying to do here.
So, well, I want to thank you publicly, and if you need anything from me, you know, I want to be helpful and do whatever I can.
All right. Well, we're going to take you up on that.
Well, thank you so much for having me on the show.
All right. You have a great rest of the day, and appreciate you being in Jefferson City.
No problem. Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, we're going to get back to Eco Radio KC. Natural E has a room full of folks here after these messages.
We're looking inward, and so we're sort of Fortress America. We're building the walls around us, and we're not really wanting to have a negotiation with somebody or talk to them. When you demonize the other side and you're basically saying they're not appropriate human beings, it's easy to treat them badly.
That's Longview Community College political science instructor John Shively on the next Radioactive Magazine discussing the causes and cures of political polarity. It's on the next Radioactive Magazine, Tuesday at 6 p.m.
Nomi Prince.
These tax cuts just, went into play and screwed people, for example, in California and potentially here who have wildfire problems. But they help these corporations receive more money in their pockets in the future that they are using now to buy more of their shares. And all of it has been connected to these policies of basically infusing the system with cheap money and allowing it to artificially stimulate the markets. That's not an inherently stable system.
Wednesday, 9 a.m.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. You might remember this one from science class. Plants absorb water and carbon dioxide and use sunlight to convert them into energy. Now scientists want to mimic that process using a technique called artificial photosynthesis. Dick Coe of the Solar Fuels Institute says the goal is to pull water and carbon dioxide from the air and turn it into a liquid fuel.
So in the end, we create fuel that we can then burn in the same internal combustion engine that our cars run on.
In natural photosynthesis, plants rely on energy from the sun. But Coe says artificial photosynthesis can be powered by any energy source, such as wind, solar, or hydropower.
The chemistry doesn't care where the energy comes from.
As long as the energy source is renewable, the process does not add carbon dioxide to the atmosphere. And it's a potential way to make good use of excess wind or solar power that might otherwise go to waste. There are several financial and technical challenges to overcome, But Coe's not alone in believing it will transform the fuel market. The World Economic Forum named artificial photosynthesis one of the top 10 emerging technologies of 2017. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. Learn more at yaleclimateconnections.org.
Good evening, everyone. Glad to be back on the air. This is Naturally, and I'm in the studio. I have Mrs. Jefferson with the Historic Northeast Midtown Association. I have Pastor Will Adams of the St. John Church in Kansas City, Kansas. And also joined with Mr. Melton McIntosh, who is a concerned citizen from Kansas City, Kansas. Welcome, everyone.
Thank you.
Hey, thanks for having us.
Absolutely. So glad to have you all here. Full house. So we're here to talk about John Garland Park. Will you give us a brief introduction on John Garland Park for our listeners who don't know, Mrs. Jefferson?
Sure. Yes, I'd be happy to. First of all, Aaron, if it's okay, I'd like to thank KKFI, thank Richard Mabian, and thank you for hosting us. This is the second time that we've appeared on the show about the John Garland Park, and it's great to have this venue as far as that's concerned. Back in around the 70s, John Garland Park was the landfill was created. It was after that it was named the John Garland Park. But it was a landfill that was created right in the residential neighborhood there and affected a lot of families because people would play there and that type of thing. The citizens decided because they had seen leachate and some of the other things that they felt were not pleasant to live with, felt that it was a hazard, so they protested, and the city then closed the landfill in the early 80s.
So when it was operating as a landfill, it was causing issues?
Yes.
Even when it was operating as it was intended to?
Yes, okay. Yes, that's my understanding. And then after closing it, there were some issues. It was dubbed the model landfill, but today landfills are not constructed like that, so it was a precursor to modern technology. The landfill stayed closed for around 30 years, and then in the early 2000, concerned citizens brokered with the EPA, who came together to look at the landfill, held a visioning session, came up with some uses for that landfill that did not end up actually materializing. So the landfill again was dormant until around 2009, when another citizen spoke up and said, "This is in my neighborhood, and it's not an economic benefit. It's not doing anything for the community." And so that's when he approached the EPA, who again commissioned and implemented, created a reuse plan. And we met at Pastor Adams Church to do so.
All right, Pastor Adams, I'm looking at this right now, the reuse assessment for the John Garland Park site. How is your church involved with that?
Well, basically, our church is adjacent to the JGP, John Garland Park.
Mm-hmm.
And so literally it's just a concern for our citizens, for our community. And if there's just a little toxic gas,
mm-hmm.
you wouldn't want your kids there. You wouldn't want to play with your grandkids there. So our concern was that the park material was put in this place,
mm-hmm.
and all this is done, and nothing has been said about whether it's safe or not.
Okay.
And so that's our major concern, and we play a role of just bringing awareness to the community.
So the awareness that, because it's a park now.
Yes,
it was a landfill,
it's a park now. Yeah.
And there was a reuse plan that came up in 2010. And there were many things on this reuse plan that I see here.
Yes.
That they had intended, reuse goals, transform the site into a positive community asset, consider a renewable technology demonstration park if viable. I'm reading this directly.
Yes.
From this. So those things didn't happen, but there was playground equipment put in,
no meeting, no awareness brought to the community,
mm-hmm.
of why these decisions was made, because literally you have a slide, and then 10 feet, 15 feet from the slide, you have a fence with a toxic waste to allow it to escape.
Oh.
You see what I'm saying? And no other community park has these. We did the research. No other community park has this,
mm-hmm.
and they cannot answer to why they put this in John Garland Park, and nobody wants to take responsibility. nobody really, everybody wants to pass the buck. Mm-hmm. And we're not trying to be deep, not trying to be real theological. Would you play there? Mm-hmm. Would you barbecue there?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what we're left with.
Mr. McIntosh, as a concerned citizen, what are you most concerned about with this John Carla Park issue?
Everything, to be blunt, everything. About October of last year, I was riding down Fish Street, and I noticed that there was a park on it. And so I recorded video, and I posted it on Facebook, because when we were younger coming up, we couldn't even play at that park because it was so toxic. And so imagine my surprise when I ride past there, and I see all of this beautiful equipment,
mm-hmm.
and these little soccer fields and a track, but it's toxic. And I can't let my kids or my grandkids
mm-hmm.
play there because it's not safe.
Well, would they put playground equipment and these things on there if they didn't think that it was safe? I mean, I'm sure there was a community event that they held to let everybody know that what direction they were trying to head in with the John Garland Park. Is that the case?
Actually, they didn't.
Okay. Well, Mr. Jefferson, you want to break that down for us? Why was there no community meeting about this? It just appeared one day, literally, like...
Yes, literally, that's exactly what happened. In July of 2013, the park was opened. Part of the fence was destroyed, and the entire park was open. At that time, there was no covering of any of the vents or exhaust pipes or anything, and anyone could just walk right onto the property. Since then, of course, there have been enclosures and that type of thing. But no, and in fact, calls to the local government to request a public awareness session, which, by the way, is what we're requesting, were ignored. And we were just told, well, if anybody has any questions, just have them call us. And that's unsatisfactory. And the position that we have is that we're getting calls and concerns from citizens in our service area, and we don't have the answers. So once again, I thank KKFI and thank you, Aaron, as well as Richard Mabian, for allowing us to have this this venue. We want the public to hear us, and we want to get that public support so we can go to step two, which would be to the commission standing committee meeting and to the commission, full the mayor, and say, we the citizens want and demand, require a public awareness session. We have a master plan that's under place right now, being done right now. And there's been just a lot of money and effort to let the community know that there's a master plan and get community input. The same has not been done for the John Carlin Park.
Now, other park, is there any example that mimics how this park was handled? By that I mean, were there new parks built in Kansas City, Kansas, and the public was made aware? And so people are confused, like, well, why didn't they do that with John Garland Park, especially since it was on a landfill, a previous landfill? I mean, does that make sense?
Yeah, I can't answer that question. I don't know of any other park that was built on a landfill. This is the only one that I know of.
But, I mean, like, other grand – well, I guess you just explained it. Like, with the master plan, there was plenty of press about it. Plenty of public awareness made about the master plan, just not about this. So there is methane gas. Are we sure that it's escaping, or we're not sure that it's escaping from the landfill?
Oh, you can smell it.
Oh.
Yes.
Yes.
You can smell it.
Yes, you can. Especially at dusk.
And we've had that problem just maybe less than a month ago during worship time on Sunday morning, where we called the gas company because I'm like, do you smell that? That's gas. And I'm thinking maybe we have some gas leaking or something's leaking. But because it smelled like natural gas.
Right.
But then when they come out, we have no gas leaks. There's no answers.
And they don't turn their head to where the smell might be emanating from and go say anything about that?
So the levels don't indicate it. We have a monitor in our building.
Uh-huh.
And the levels are at 00.00, and it's so low.
Uh-huh.
And that's the concern.
Hmm.
A little toxin doesn't destroy. I mean, this is a neighborhood that's dealt with this. How old are you?
Oh, I'm 50.
He grew up there. They didn't even play in this area.
Right.
I am not from Wyandotte County. I'm a pastor that's been there for 13 years.
Mm-hmm.
And when I first come there 13 years ago, the parishioners were terrified to go across the street.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
they even believe that it led to certain individuals dying from different cancers and different things of individuals that have spent a lot of time down there that all had died from these different kind of things. This has been going on for 2004. We have an article here of 2004 when they were talking about
what's
it being
the
ignored.
Read that title.
And the article says, "Now they'll stop ignoring you. Ignored for 20 years, toxic John Garland Park, but finally the heat is on." And this was in 2004.
What does that article discuss?
It discusses the same thing we were talking about, the fact that there's toxic waste and this is a live wasteland and it's lying there like this. And from 2004 till now, they've put a park on top of it.
I don't know what to say about that. I mean,
and if you go south of in this same landfill, if you go south, they don't want you to go in this area. Don't go in this area, but you can play over here. But there's an area that still is damaged, has these damages, because they don't even cut it.
Mm-hmm.
And Sister Eleanor's been doing this for a lot longer than I have, and I just joined forces with Miss Eleanor because of the effort she was making for the community, and it's just it's being ignored, and so hopefully just by you guys giving us this stage, and thank God for sure for thank you guys for KKFI for allowing us just to voice this and try to raise some awareness.
Yes, I'm deeply concerned. I can imagine just the years of concerned citizens.
Yes,
and then one day you turn around.
Yeah.
Not because they're doing a public awareness campaign about what's going on, but because they just threw up some playground equipment.
Threw playground equipment, put a walking track in there. Nobody walks there. Nobody plays there.
And I'm sure that we could have used that money, you know, maybe to remedy that area first or something like that. Was this private dollars funded, public funding for the playground equipment?
A lot of it was public funding. Now there is a football court that was gifted by Sporting Kansas City as part of its agreement when it came to Kansas City. But a lot of the money, if not the great majority of that money, is public money.
Yeah.
Yes.
So let's go back to what you said, Mrs. Jefferson, the reason you want to have this conversation on the air.
Well, the reason that the conversation is important from my perspective and the perspective of Pastor Adams and Mr. McIntosh and others, is that it will hone in on two important aspects. Number one, the safety. When one tells me the park is safe, then I say, okay, what does that mean? What does it actually mean? And then how is it safe? How is it kept safe? What has to happen to it today and tomorrow for it to be safe, even after we're gone? And what's in place to ensure that? The other piece is the suitability. As you referenced in the reuse plan, there were several options for that reuse on that landfill, anywhere from an amphitheater to renewable energy to even an apiary. But none of that, again, was vetted to the community. So is it suitable for what exists right now? Even though it is true that where we live, health is a concern, a big concern, exercise is a wonderful, beneficial component. But then also where we live, we have economic distress. We need jobs. We need income. We need a lot of things as far as density, new housing, and that type of thing. What are the best uses for that? 44 acres is what we have to work with. And so the public awareness session will do exactly that. It will hone in on the safety, allow people to make their own decisions based upon the knowledge that they've gained. We want to have a precursor to that, which allows for definitions and concepts to be explained. And then we will be able to move to the suitability and allow people to really say, yes, this is what would be good for us. This would be good for our children. And then move on with that.
I'd like to put our number to call into the studio and join this conversation out there, 816-931-5534. If you'd like to join this conversation about John Garland Park, 816-931-5534. Perhaps you're a concerned citizen, you live in the area, or you work in the area. Please give us a call. So I'm thinking, though, with the different options that were named in the reuse plan that you just referenced, I'm not sure if a park's not good on top of this landfill, why would any of those other options like housing or a place to work, why would those be good on this landfill?
Well, I'm sure that there would be benefits and disadvantages on any of the plans. Then this particular instance and what I heard from the session at St. John's Church is that the parishioners and what I hear from Mr. McIntosh is a deep concern that children are playing on an area that is safe or not safe or whatever, but with all the vacant land that we have in that area, is it necessary to even have that as an issue? Is it necessary to even be concerned with that, especially in today's environment where adverse childhood experiences is a real issue and things that children are exposed to, lead, for example. We have a lot of demolition in that area. So would it be better, for whatever the use would it be better, however, to look at the current use of outdoor equipment, recreation equipment, especially for children, youth, put it someplace so that this question never, ever has to surface again. So that's what we're hoping to.
Thank you, Mrs. Jefferson. I think we have a caller. Would you please state your name and what part of the city you're calling from?
Yes, my name is Chester Owens, calling from Kansas City, Kansas.
Okay, please go ahead with your question.
I had a question. First, I'd like to commend the participants, Ms. Jefferson, Reverend Adams, and Mr. McIntosh for what you're doing. I certainly agree with everything you're saying. I guess it's more of a statement. I'm familiar with the landfill from when it first began. It's amazing that the city would allow something like this to exist when Wyandotte County is rated one of the lowest, I think the second lowest county in Kansas as far as health concerns, that they would allow this to go on. It's just mind-boggling that they would not even get the courtesy, and I understand the citizens of this area, to have a public hearing. It's utterly amazing, disgraceful, and immoral.
Thank you very much for your call. Would you like to respond to that, Pastor Adams?
Well, we agree with Brother Owens. We just thank God for you listening. Thank you for calling in and voicing your opinion. And our concern is that this raises the awareness. I don't know what will happen. I don't know what it'll lead to, but something needs to happen. So and even now with the park already being put in, there's still some things that I believe that the unified government and those are individuals that make the call should come back and reach with the community, and listen and just let's work together and let's listen to each other. And let's find out. Is it toxic or not?
The health rankings just came out last year for the state of Kansas, and we're not progressing. But we hear all of these comments about the healthy communities, the healthy campus, and it's really just mind-boggling that they would allow this type of thing to continue. I might say that I go back all the way, Ms. Jefferson, know my history with even with dealing with this landfill. I have no confidence that the unified government would, and we have a new administration, at least a new mayor would go in, is going in. But I had no confidence that the previous administration would do anything, or the people who are personally responsible for having a public hearing. I'm aware how he refused to do it. So I have no confidence at all, but we need to do whatever's necessary, take whatever action is necessary to try to stop this type of foolishness that's going on. It's immoral. It's hurting our children. It's hurting our elderly. And people are so damn stupid, they don't realize it's hurting all of Wyandotte County.
All right. We agree with you wholeheartedly, and we love the way you express yourself. Thank you for sharing your expressions.
I might add that I'm a former public official in Wyandotte County, so I'm familiar with how the government works.
Okay.
And they know that I'm familiar, but I'm always pushed to the curb because I always speak my mind, have always done this.
Well, we thank you, and we definitely will need you to keep standing with us. We'll need you to come out. Miss Eleanor, you know, she'll get the information out to you. St. John is just a hub.
Thank you, Reverend Adams.
We use that location so that we'll have a place to meet. And freely be able to gather. So thank you so much for your concern for us.
You're certainly welcome.
If anyone else would like to call in, the number is 816-931-5534, 816-931-5534. We have Mrs. Jefferson with the historic Northeast Midtown Association. We have Pastor Will Adams of the St. John Church, and we have Mr. Melton McIntosh, a concerned citizen from Kansas City, Kansas.
Yes.
I'm glad that we got a caller in to join us in solidarity on this issue, and I agree wholeheartedly. Like he had mentioned, the heat report, but mm-hmm. that recently came out, and that did show the health disparities that folks in Kansas City, Kansas, experience at a greater...
The lowest.
Right.
And, the lowest.
And just to keep repeating measures like this that are not just harmful and toxic, but disrespectful.
Yes.
Exactly.
And we've been ignored. It's been pushed aside. City officials have come and gone. It still has not been addressed. Miss Eleanor has been on the wall for a number of years. And so we have to be persistent. Because sooner or later, there'll be a crack in the door for us. Don't you still believe that, Eleanor?
I'm hoping. That's exactly what I'm hearing.
Come on now.
All right, we have another caller. Please state your name and what part of the city you're calling from.
Okay, from Independence. And I had listened to a show by Richard Mabian on this subject some time ago. And I was have forgotten or whatever. What company was it that bought that land?
Mr. Jefferson, do you?
The company that bought the land. I'm not aware of...
What I understood was that you're talking about the Bannister Complex, right?
Oh, no. This is the John Garland Park, a closed landfill in Kansas City, Kansas.
This is Richard Mabian.
Oh, okay. My head was in someplace else. I've heard about that, too, and that's absolutely incredibly, as you said, thoughtless, criminal.
We have another caller on the line. And I do remember you calling in, and what it wasn't that someone had bought the property. It was taken over by KDHE, and that's the state agency. But we'll have to talk about it at another time, okay? Thank you for calling.
Okay.
Caller, please state your name and the part of the city you're calling from.
Hi, my name is Janice Witt, and I'm actually calling from Wyandotte County.
All right.
Hey, Janice, how you doing?
Okay.
Pastor Will. Janice. Janice, you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Hey,
how are you?
Doing great. Sister Janice is a part of our group. She's a part of the of this group that is pioneering and fighting for the community. And we're so glad that you called in. Come on, chime in with us.
Well, it so greatly disturbs me because I look at while you all are speaking, I went and posted it on the Facebook page of KKFI because I'm trying to stay low, but it's really hard. Because so many people aren't empowered to speak up in Wyandotte County, and so they lay low and they hope that folks like Richard Mabian and folks like Eleanor Jefferson, that they stand forward and continue the fight for the youth and the atmosphere in Wyandotte County. But I'm so proud of Melton McIntosh for grabbing a hold and standing up and making this known and seen again on his own. Because that is what it takes in Wyandotte County to make change. It takes people who are not afraid to stand up. And when Melton called me and asked me to go down there and look, because I argued with him and told him there was no way that what he was telling me was true, I took pictures. And I posted those pictures, at least a couple of them, on your Facebook page. Because there is such a disparity in Wyandotte County, according to the county health rankings, which we've talked about, that... You have these mysterious illnesses that are murdering, and I say murdering on purpose, because they are murdering our youth in utero. These children are dying within the first year of their birth to such a high level that the Centers for Disease Control have come in to try and evaluate what the problem is. And, of course, our leadership says, well, we don't know. Well, I point directly to the Northeast. Because you asked a very, very good question. Is the ground safe for the children? I think we have to look at it from a different viewpoint. Regardless of whether the EPA says that the ground is safe or not, the perception is unsafe. We have legal toxins that are being shot into the air at, from Fairfax. Those are, we are being legally poisoned in that area. This is cleared by the EPA. They know that there are levels, high levels of toxins in Fairfax. There is nothing they're going to do about it. They've already said it. They are testing the air in Argentina, but they refuse to test the air in Fairfax, which is the backdrop to that toxic park. See, I own property down there, and I, like everyone else that has history in that area, remember seeing the hallucinations if you stayed in the house too long. Remember the smells. Remember the sludge that was in the ground, the oil literally oozing up out of the ground. But they've covered that up now. It's, the EPA says it's safe. I'm not going to argue with that. That doesn't mean that it is safe for your child. It doesn't mean that the air above it is safe. And even if it does, what is the value of the children? Do the children deserve better than being presented a Bollywood style? What is that movie they had? Slumdog Millionaire?
Yes.
Where the children were living in the trash dump?
Right.
This is the same thing that we're doing to our children.
Yes, and Janice, we really thank you for your call. We definitely need you to keep standing with us. We don't need you in the background. We got to stand on the foreground because you have the history. You know what's you know about the place, and we can get others influenced, and we can get others to hear our voices, and eventually somehow some way we'll make ground on this. We're just not gonna give up. Okay.
I'm proud of y'all.
Hey, thank you so much. Keep fighting with us.
Okay. I promise I won't go.
All right. Thank you. We love you, girl.
Take care.
Talk to you soon.
We love you, too. Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Now, Mrs. Jefferson, you had mentioned you wanted a public hearing. All three of you, Pastor Adams and Mr. McIntosh.
Yes.
Please tell us about that again. Which
The purpose of the public awareness session is to zero in on two aspects. The safety, what does that mean? What the definitions and, you know, what has to happen in order to keep it safe and for any use. And then the other is the suitability, how the 44 acres should be used. Is the best use for that in the outdoor recreation equipment? Is the best use for that in some type of renewable energy? What is the, and what would benefit the community the very most? And so for that, Pastor Adams has mentioned he's willing to write a letter. And the letter will go to the mayor and to the commissioners asking for a standing committee hearing. And we certainly would like to have as many people as possible either in publicly appear in person or to write a letter. And I would just say if we have opportunity for Mr. McIntosh and Pastor Adams to give their email address or whatever so people who didn't call in but who want to lend support could just let them know, yeah, call on me when you're ready. I'll be with you.
Yeah, my email address is melton.mcintosh, that's MELTONMCINTOSH at gmail.com.
And this is Pastor Will Adams. I can be reached at Pastor, PastorWilAdams at gmail.com also, and also at Facebook with Will Adams, WILADAMS.
That's one L.
All right. Don't want to get confused with Will Smith.
Well, I will put the information on our Eco Radio KC Facebook page. You can also probably find out at St. John's on Sunday.
Yes,
you know
John,
what I mean?
KCK
they'll be there.
Church, come over.
You know,
2620 North 5th Street. We accept all. Looking for one more.
And then also Mrs. Jefferson is with the Historic Northeast Midtown Association, and you all have a strong you have a web presence. You can be found online and Northeast KCK.
NortheastKCK.org. And she does a great job, too.
Yes.
Thank you so much, Ms. Eleanor,
for
allowing us to ride
just,
with you. Thank you so much. Thank you so much again to KKFI. Thank you for allowing us to get this out on air.
I really, I hope you all get that public hearing, public
awareness session.
Public thank you. Public awareness session about the John Garland Park. You can join forces with them by meeting at the St. John Baptist Church in Kansas City, Kansas, and also look up the NortheastKCK.org to find out about the HNMA. And then this is Naturally. I'm going to wrap us up with our local local events as we do. The KC Chamber will be hosting their annual energy from Tuesday, their energy forum Tuesday, April 10th. The topic for this year's Chamber Energy Forum will be the future of energy in uncertain times. The event will be on Tuesday, April 10th at 3:30 at the downtown Marriott, Kansas City, and a reception will follow immediately after. This year, the Chamber's Forum will be in conjunction with the Missouri Energy Initiative and the Midwest Environmental Compliance Conference to combine forces in order to provide for a more robust program. You can learn how to make your own biochar as a garden soil amendment. Learn how to convert garden waste into soil enhancer with the 2,000-year-old practice of making biochar at this free workshop with the Great Plains Biochar Institute on Thursday, March 29th. Biochar is produced by the thermal decomposition of organic materials such as wood, manure, or leaves. The workshop will cover the science of biochar, how to make it, and how to use it, and include a hands-on demonstration that is feasible for landowners, small businesses, and gardeners. The workshop will be held from 8 a.m. to noon on Thursday, March 29th at the Douglas County Fairgrounds. That's in Lawrence, Kansas at 2110 Harper Street. And finally, you can hike Swope Park March 31st, 10 a.m. to noon. This Saturday, you can join a guided hike through Swope Park and enjoy the budding trees and flowers in Kansas City's largest park. A Missouri master naturalist will lead the hike that begins at a trailhead near the Lakeside Nature Center. The hike is free and open to the public. There will be early out opportunities for those who wish to complete the hike before noon. Organizers suggest hikers dress appropriately for the weather, rain gear, layers of clothing for cold weather, sunscreen and hats for warm weather, and closed-toed shoes or boots. Carrying water is also recommended. Severe weather is considered a notice of cancellation. These hikes are not appropriate for children and strollers as there are rocks and logs to step over and hills and valleys to traverse. The free event will begin at 10 a.m. Saturday, March 31st at the Lakeside Nature Center, 4701 East Gregory Boulevard. For more information, you can call Lakeside Nature Center at 816-513-8960. And Mr. Mike Murphy, that's all I got.
What do you do when your son discovers his direction and purpose in the military, and you and your family are staunchly anti-war? On this week's All Souls Forum, Robert F. Summers shares his family story about how the war in Afghanistan became both savior and destroyer of their beloved son, Francis. Summer will explore how he and his wife, Heather, developed a more nuanced understanding of the military after they became a military family, despite their continuing opposition to the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. Join us Wednesday evenings at 6 p.m. here on 90.1 FM, KKFI.
What's that sound, you ask?
It's the sound of one-time-use trash. People get bottled water because of hydration, convenience, and the claim of better taste and quality. Truth is, there's usually no difference between bottled and tap water. The healthier choice is to get a cool, reusable bottle made of lined aluminum, steel, glass, or special plastic that won't break off chemical bits like the plastic used in disposable bottles. Get healthy and keep your world from becoming a big junk pile. Disposables dead. Brought to you by J.C. Herman High School and 90.1 FM KKFI.
The new spending bill spares the environment. That story and more on H2O Radio's weekly news report. I'm Jamie Sudler.
I'm Franny Halperin, and it's This Week in Water.
The omnibus budget bill that the president signed into law last week did not cut into the nation's environmental programs as Trump's initial plans had proposed, and some programs received increases.
The Washington Post reports that EPA's budget will stay at current levels, although the Trump administration had wanted to slash it by more than 20%.
NOAA's budget will be increased to help maintain the National Weather Service. The White House had proposed cutting it by 8%, but instead the agency is getting more to help weather forecasts and predicting disasters.
The Office of Energy Efficiency and Renewable Energy, which Trump wanted to cut by almost three quarters, is getting a 14% increase, and the National Park System is also getting a raise.
Funding for restoration projects in the Great Lakes, Chesapeake Bay, San Francisco Bay, Puget Sound, South Florida, Lake Pontchartrain in Louisiana, and estuaries in southern New England will all stay at their current levels.
The science of climate change was the focus of a courtroom hearing last week in a case brought by the cities of San Francisco and Oakland against giant oil companies seeking to hold them responsible for harm caused by global warming.
The judge in the case scheduled something never heard of before, an in-court tutorial on climate science. And what occurred may show how the companies are going to defend themselves.
The courtroom was packed as the lawyer for Chevron said that his client believes fossil fuels burned by people are causing climate change, but places the blame on those who burn the fuels, like those of us who drive cars with gasoline.
The lawyer for the company deflected the focus from companies that find, refine, and sell oil and gas to those who burn it. The Sacramento Bee reports that he said that it's how people are living their lives that is causing global warming.
Chevron's lawyer was the only representative on the side of the big companies to address the judge, and there were others, ExxonMobil, Shell, and ConocoPhillips, who sat silent. The judge gave them a week to say whether they disagreed with Chevron's position.
The U.S. Supreme Court is allowing two class action lawsuits against state and local officials to proceed for the lead contamination in Flint, Michigan.
A lower court had dismissed the cases, but now the plaintiffs can proceed to show their civil rights were violated when the city switched its water source from Lake Huron to the Flint River 4 years ago.
The switch caused lead contamination in the city's system. No level of exposure to lead is safe.
15 current or former state and city employees have been charged in related criminal cases, and it was learned last week that a new investigation has begun into financial fraud in the water crisis.
The lead investigator for the state attorney general told a legislative committee that he believes there was a significant financial fraud that drove the city's switch to a water supply contaminated with lead. The Detroit Free Press reports he said that greed and personal profit motivated the decision.
Before last week's revelation, many thought that the people responsible for the disaster had only been careless or reckless. State Senator Coleman Young II said the information added a sinister and ghoulish layer to the Flint disaster.
The total environmental damage resulting from Hurricane Harvey that dropped unprecedented amounts of rain in the Houston area has not yet come to light, nearly 8 months after the catastrophe.
A report by the Associated Press and the Houston Chronicle shows far more widespread toxic impact than authorities publicly reported.
The area is heavily industrialized with 500 chemical plants, 10 refineries, and thousands of miles of oil, gas, and chemical pipelines.
The report concludes that more than 100 toxic releases into air, water, and land were never publicized, and in two of the biggest releases, authorities understated the extent or potential toxicity.
Texas regulators have looked into almost 90 incidents, but have not recommended one enforcement action. Federal authorities have looked at only a handful of industrial spills.
Some local officials told the AP that the state's industry-friendly approach has weakened efforts to get companies to clean up spills. A supervising environmental attorney for the county said that the public will probably never know the extent of what happened to the environment. And finally this week, as oceans are being impacted by climate change, plastics, and overfishing, researchers are working against the clock to document marine life and how it's faring. But it's not easy to observe sea creatures in the field without being noticed and spooking them with noise and gadgets, until now, perhaps.
Meet Sophie, short for a soft robotic fish, that was developed by researchers at MIT. It's the first robot to be able to swim in an undulating manner similar to a real fish, darting up and down and turning. It's quite convincing because of its soft body that makes it wiggle like the best of them and not give itself away.
The team controls the fish with a waterproofed Super Nintendo controller and uses a custom acoustic communication system to change Sophie's speed and have it make specific moves and turns.
According to a press release from MIT, Sophie did test dives in the Rainbow Reef in Fiji and swam at depths of more than 50 feet for up to 40 minutes at once, nimbly handling currents and taking high-resolution photos and videos using, what else, a fisheye lens. None of the nearby inhabitants seem to mind the mechanical interloper.
The researchers, who are from MIT's Computer Science and Artificial Intelligence Lab, say they hope to use Sophie's onboard camera to recognize and follow a specific type of fish, and they plan to build a whole school of robots with sensors to monitor ocean conditions.
The team views using soft robotic fish as a first step toward developing an underwater observatory of sorts that could help us learn more about ocean health and possibly uncover some of the mysteries of the seas. To check out a video of Sophie, go to our website at h2oradio.org.
That's it for this week in water. We'll see you next time. This Week in Water is supported by the American Water Works Association, bringing together the best and brightest minds in the water sector at ACE 18. Learn more at awwa.org/ACE18.
Thanks for listening to Eco Radio KC on 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.